Hi, my name is Mia Plesic, the founder of Her Organics, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story. And every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning. And every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story. The startup story would not be possible if it wasn't for the support of our sponsor, MoboCash. Move money like a miracle with MoboCash, the free money app that kicks cash. Download MoboCash app on iTunes or Google Play today, and you'll get your slick new Mobo card in the mail. You are no longer dependent upon digital currency alone, but you'll have a card that allows you to purchase at POS stations, restaurants, buy online, anywhere that you want to use your money. No credit check, no credit impact, quick direct deposit, FDIC insured, and free to register and activate. Support our sponsor, MoboCash. Visit movo.cash or thestartupstory.co/movocash. Before we jump into our episode this week, I want to share a review that was posted on iTunes by RFMyers03, who gave The Startup Story a 5-star rating and wrote, "I love the episode with Darby Angel. She's such a down-to-earth, courageous, and inspirational person. Hearing her story and all the ways she has been told no, but didn't let that stop her, made me feel like anything is possible. I appreciated the way that James led the conversation as well. He asked insightful questions and ones that I was thinking as well. Overall, this was a great episode, and I found a ton of value from it." Thank you so very much, RFMyers03. You are absolutely right. Darby's story is amazing and one that I hope many more people will hear over the coming months. My hope in sharing these amazing stories is that it will expose the challenges that one will face during the entrepreneurial journey. You will have a realistic perspective of the journey as well as an understanding that your challenges are not unique to you. All of this is to help inspire you and all the listeners to keep moving forward. So for all of you that are listening right now, if you have found any value in any of the Startup Story episodes, please leave a review on iTunes. I'll continue to read one each week, so plug your brand in the review as well. Giving your business a plug, a little micro mini ad in an episode that will last for years to come, is the least I can do if you take the time out of your day to write a review. Now let's jump into this week's episode. Our guest today is Mia Plesic. Mia is 27 years old and has started 6 companies, all leading her towards her current startup, Her Organics. Her Organics is a subscription service where women can sign up to have their tampons delivered automatically each month. Like I said, Her Organics is Mia's 6th startup and her 5th e-commerce startup. In fact, when she was 22, she launched her first e-commerce startup and reached $30,000 in daily revenue within 6 months. But Mia's journey was not met without challenge.
I opened the envelope and I read it, and it was a letter from their lawyer saying, "This is what's happened. They're removing you from the Bronx." And I remember the day we had, I had my own private office and there was a big glass door, and it was only the day before that they'd gone and put frosting on the glass so you can't see in. And I remember looking at the door thinking, thank God no one can see in right now because I'm about to have a mental breakdown. And I'll never forget the day I said to myself out loud, I'm going to give myself 5 minutes to cry. Like cry so hard, because I just was at my lowest. I just lost my first business and felt like I'd let my whole family down and myself. I just lost another business and felt like, is this ever going to end? Am I making the right decision in life in this whole business thing? Is this for me? I set the timer on my phone for 5 minutes and I literally laid on the floor under my desk and I just was hysterical. I put a pillow over my face and I screamed and cried and just got to my lowest of low.
In listening to Mia's startup story, you will hear how important it is to trust in your own ability, regardless of the naysayers that surround you, even if the naysayers are your own family members. You will learn how important it is to have a real passion and motivation for the industry or product that you're wanting to bring to market. And you will discover that anyone, at any age, can pursue their entrepreneurial dreams and reach incredible levels of success if they are willing to put in the work and push through the challenges, because there will be challenges. Mia's story was such an inspiration and encouragement to me, and I know will be an encouragement to you as well. Her entrepreneurial journey has many challenges that we will discuss in this episode, But what makes her story so incredible is that because she's only 27, we can see how the challenges she overcame as a child played such a significant role in her current success today. I mean, after all, her teen years were just a decade ago.
I didn't come from a business-oriented family. In fact, it was quite the opposite. I came from a very average family on an average income in an average house. You know, I didn't miss out on anything as a child, but, you know, we didn't have the luxuries that some families have, which I believe was a benefit to me in some ways because it allowed me to dream of having things that maybe other people had that we couldn't have. And I'm from Melbourne, Australia, so I grew up around Melbourne, and my mother actually married a man over in Croatia when she was 20 years old, fell pregnant with me. The war started in 92 and she had to flee back to Australia and he never came. So I hadn't met my father until I was about 18 years old, which I think definitely had, it did have a little bit of a play on the person that I've become, but, you know, definitely in a positive way as well. So Mum moved back to Australia and started her life again here, and she actually got back with her childhood sweetheart, who I now call my dad. He's been around since I was 2 years old. So that was my childhood, a bit different to a lot of other families, but I think it's made me the person I am today, definitely.
Do you think not having your dad and not knowing who your dad was, meeting your dad until you were 18, that's a disruptive childhood. Do you think that gave you some level of tolerance for, I don't want to say brokenness, but a level of tolerance for disruption, a level of tolerance for the not the norm? Do you think that helped set a foundation for what you were able to accept as a human for your entrepreneurial journey?
Absolutely. I think that initially growing up, I always thought, you know, why me? I kind of always felt sorry for myself. I thought that, is there something wrong with me? Is there a reason why he's not here? But as I got older, I became more, I guess, susceptible to that. And I became a bit more aware of the surroundings and how that has made me the person I am. So it made me stronger. It made me more resilient. It made me learn how to deal with my feelings and deal with those emotions and those thoughts. And honestly, it did make me stronger.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So in your high school years, we'll say, and obviously I don't know what high school in Australia is like, but, you know, here in the States, you know, your junior year of high school, your third year, you're going to, you know, college and career days, and they're having these fairs. It's like, here's what you can do for a job. Here's the schools you can go to. What did you think you wanted to be in the latter part of your high school years?
Look, for me, I hated school. I despised school. And even talking about it now at nearly 28 years old, I get a bit anxious and a bit shaky thinking about it because it was a really horrible experience for me.
Why so?
Well, when I was in the seventh grade, so my first year of high school, I was diagnosed with this health problem called a leaky gut disorder, which is an autoimmune disease where my body wasn't absorbing nutrients through my stomach lining. It sounds quite gross. And basically, in short, whenever I would digest food, it would leak out of my digestive system, go into my bloodstream, go to my brain, and I'd have full unblown seizures several times a day. So that was a really, really hard, probably 3 or 4 years of my life, because not only could the doctors not diagnose me because they didn't know what was going on, but it really affected my mental health because I was so scared to go to school, to leave the house, to open the windows. It was a really hard time for myself and my family, probably more so, because I would not leave my mother's side ever. And that, you know, caused a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear. And, you know, it's funny, I look back now and that was quite a long time ago, but how far I've come from the feelings that I used to feel. I would never go into a shopping center or a grocery store, or even if I was to get into a car, I'd have to sit in the back seat with a pillow and lie down. It was just like I almost became so paralyzed to this anxiety. And then I didn't go to school for 3 years because I was so scared that something would happen at school. But, you know, through help and through time, I managed to push through that. And I still have my days where I feel a bit nervous or whatever. But I think because I was so different at school, because I was quite anxious and I was quite, you know, I didn't want to be around a lot of people because that would make me feel quite worried. And I was always quite a loner. And from that, organically, bullies come about and you get teased. And, you know, I used to have panic attacks in class and kids would pick on me for that. And it was a really horrible time. And I don't know why for me personally, but I was naturally always a leader. I always wanted to be a leader. I always wanted to be somebody who gave input and gave, you know, inspiration for different ideas. But I think I was really held back at school from the other kids. So I wasn't able to fully flourish into that role that I was naturally born to be.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I was really held back at school, which is why I didn't enjoy it. And, you know, I don't know, I was just, it wasn't enjoyable. Kids were horrible to me. I used to get picked on every day. I used to get pushed downstairs. I used to get, you name it, it happened to me. And as emotional as it makes me talking about it, and, you know, I look at that person that I used to be and I feel sorry for that vulnerable girl. But at the same time now, being 27 years old and the position that I'm in, I'm actually so grateful for that period of my life because it made me so strong. It made me so resilient and it made me realize that if I can get over that hurdle in life, I can really get over anything.
Yeah.
Bullying is a big thing. I'm not sure what it's like in the States. I'm
sure it's very prominent.
It's very prominent and it's really scary. And I'd love to be able to help as many people as possible to realize that if that is something that they're going through, then you will get past that. It's not the be all and end all. It's not the definition of your future, but it was a really horrible time. So school for me wasn't like, you know, oh, I'm going to go hang out with my mates. Yeah. I would try and be by myself as much as possible at school because, and not in, in saying that, I went to a really small school. There was probably 10 to 12 students in my year level.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a really small school and majority were males. So wasn't easy.
Yeah. So I assume then that your last 2 years of schooling, you probably weren't thinking, I want to keep staying in academics.
No.
So what were you thinking?
I'm actually surprised I even finished high school, to be honest, because I knew that I didn't want to go to university.
Okay.
I knew that studying wasn't something that I enjoyed. I also believe that through the illness, I lost a lot of memory and I do struggle to retain a lot of information for certain things.
Yeah.
And we'll obviously talk about this further on in the podcast, but when I found my niche, when I found what I'm passionate about, my bubble of e-commerce, that helped me a lot. But in terms of studying further, it just wasn't something that I really was excited about doing. Even though my entire family were saying that that's what I had to do, that was the normal. You need to go to university.
Yeah.
You need to go and get a 9-to-5. You need to get a corporate job. But the thought of that for me was just hell.
Yeah.
I did not want that at all. But at the same time, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that I wanted to be a leader. I've always been a very creative person. I love to visualize the end result of something, creating something. Like I was always that kid in the shed building furniture or going to the tip and finding destroyed furniture and recreating it into something else, or finding a piece of furniture on the side of the street and rebuilding it and you know, making something out of it and then selling it, little things like that. So I always knew that I was creative, but I didn't know what e-commerce was. I didn't know what business was. So it wasn't until later on in life that I found that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of where you were at age 18, based on what you've just shared with us, a lifelong illness that caused you to be somewhat of a recluse. Mm-hmm. We withdrew from people. I assume your non-family relationships were really, really small. Mm-hmm. You had to deal with bullying and all the adversity comes from that. You didn't have your dad in your life. You had a lot of things that I think would probably cause people to want to play the safe route, right? Like there's all this unknown, but you obviously did not want university or college. And so you're like, because that would have been the safe route coming out of high school, maybe a trade school, something, you know. What was that first post-high school next step for you?
Well, because I didn't know what I wanted to do, I had to do something. So the first thing that kind of came to my mind was let's become a personal trainer because it seemed to be such a trend when I came out of school and where I grew up, there was only one university and anyone who wasn't going to college or university was going and doing their personal training certificate. Okay. So I was like, well, I may as well do that as well. And it's something that I did, and I was a PT for about three years. And whilst I was actually doing my personal training course, somehow I was manipulated into actually going to university and starting an exercise science degree.
Okay.
I got 1 year into it and I absolutely hated it. And I thought, what am I doing? I'm wasting my time, my energy, my money. I just decided to throw in the books, literally. And to my family's disgust, I just walked away from it. But I tried it.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me. Yeah. I validated that. I was right from the start. But that was my first step when I was 18 in the real world. And I was making a little bit of money, nothing exciting. I was just paying my way.
Was your illness getting better? Because personal trainer, back to the idea of how it impacted your child. I mean, personal training, and you're one-on-one or in a class setting where you're in front of a dozen or so. Now it begins the process of you're putting yourself out there. Was your health getting better?
By this stage, 100%. Okay. My illness lasted for about, having the seizures lasted probably 2 to 3 years.
Got it. Okay.
Once they diagnosed me and medicated me for that condition, it was on the recovery path.
Awesome.
And, you know, the really great thing about that experience was, I'm sure here as well, you know, gut health is now like a trend.
Yeah, yeah.
But 20 years ago when this happened to me, or just 17, 18 years ago, it wasn't a thing. Gut health wasn't known. Your general practitioner didn't believe in it. It was just another little naturopathy kind of illness. But at the time when I was diagnosed by a naturopath / pediatrician, I learned so much about self, not self-diagnosing, but, you know, self fixing the issue that I had. It was through food and natural remedies and all that sort of stuff. So I learned so much about that. So it took about 5 years for me to really understand the fact that the seizures had stopped and I needed to believe that it wasn't going to happen anymore. And it hasn't. Tap wood, it hasn't happened.
That's awesome.
So by the time I was 18 and doing my personal training, I was well and truly over that hurdle.
Yeah.
And I was on the path to better things. But like I said, it still comes and goes every now and then. I have days where I wake up feeling a little bit nervous and anxious, but I think we all do. But by that time, I was fine.
That's awesome. So now we're here together because you are a serial entrepreneur and you're young. You're 27 as of now. And so between being a personal trainer and your first startup, my assumption is just a bunch of little jobs in between to get that. Where were you at in life before your very first startup?
So I started my first company when I was 22 years old. So between 18 and 22, I was obviously a personal trainer for a little while, decided I didn't want to do that anymore, but also at the same time refused to go and get a job. I didn't want to get a job because I felt like I was just going back to where I didn't want to be. So, you know, in my mind, I mean, I'm strange. I'm a very strange human, how I think sometimes. But I was like, well, I'm going to go on to welfare. Government welfare.
Okay.
And I'm going to get the government to pay me while I decide what I want to do in the sense of starting a business. And it's funny because I was living in this horrible one bedroom apartment where I'm from down in Melbourne. And I laugh because it's just a typical story that you hear from an entrepreneur. It was so horrible. It was like leaking pipes. I'd open up the cutlery drawer and there'd be like mouse poo in there. Like it was just your typical story, you know, entrepreneur story. But it was true. That was my life. And I didn't want to go and live at home. I didn't want to go and get housemates. I wanted to be on my own. I wanted to be in my own space because I knew that things were going to get better. And I would do anything I could to make money. I would go to the, you know, the hardware store and buy bags of concrete, and I'd make concrete pots in my front yard, and then I'd paint them, and then I'd go to the Sunday market and I'd sell them. And I'd want to make enough money on that Sunday market to pay for my rent for that week. And I would just do anything I could to kind of get through.
Yeah.
And then I found a network marketing company. I tried that, multi-level marketing, for a little while.
What was that company?
It was Arbonne.
Oh, okay.
Arbonne
yeah.
International.
Yeah. Yep.
I did that for a couple of years and I'm not in that anymore. I personally found that that business model wasn't for me. It works for some people.
It does.
It really does. But I just I don't know, I like the idea of creating my own products and being my own leader. And I felt like in that industry, you're very much in a bubble and the outside world don't really give you a positive light.
Yeah.
You only get that positive light from the people in that community.
Yeah.
So, you know, having my dreams of being an author or being a public speaker or whatever, it would only really come about in that bubble.
Got it.
I did that for a while and, you know, I didn't make much money out of that business, but at the same time, I didn't lose money. But what I did gain from that industry was I learned about business, I learned about leadership, and most importantly, I learned about personal growth. So I am really grateful for that couple of years in that business because I did learn that I wanted to be a leader, I wanted to be on stage, I wanted to speak about business and being a leader.
Yeah.
And that's when it kind of hit me. I've found my calling, and that is business. That is product-based, tangible business.
Awesome.
Although I didn't want to be in the network marketing industry anymore, it just wasn't for me. I knew that I wanted to be in business somehow. And that's when I found e-commerce.
That is awesome. Yeah. So because I know your parents, you mentioned your parents were pushing towards university and that the safe route, we'll call it. When you were on welfare in the ghetto, what was your immediate family circle preaching in your ear at that time?
I don't even think we had much of a relationship at the time. They were really disappointed in me, which makes me upset because I kept on saying to my family, just trust me, just trust me. I'm going to do something. I'm going to make you proud. But because my family, you know, I come from a European background, it's just so standard and tradition that you go to university, get a 9-to-5 and you grind until you're, you know, 60 years old. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted yachts and private jets and designers and all this stuff. And it's funny because that's never been in my blood in my family.
Yeah.
I don't know where I got that ambition from. I still don't know. When people ask me, I say, I have no idea because my family are the complete opposite to me. But they were disappointed. My grandparents, especially being European, when they migrated to Australia 50 odd years ago, they didn't want to see me not working. They didn't want to see me uneducated, as they would call it. And for me, it was hard because I felt like I was letting them down. But I knew deep down inside me that I was going to make them proud eventually. So although they weren't happy with the route that I was taking in my life, I just had to continue to believe in myself, which I'm so glad I did because so many people don't.
Correct.
So many people don't believe in their inability to believe in themselves and the path that they're taking, regardless of whether I started on welfare or not.
Yeah.
So yes, they were upset and disappointed, and there were a lot of family arguments and a lot of family stress and tears, but I just pushed through and I believed that it was going to get better.
Because you knew.
I knew, like I can't explain it in words. You just know. You know when you just know something?
Yep.
You just have this intuition. You just have this feeling inside you. You just know that even if you are at the very, very beginning and you have no idea in the world what you're doing, I just knew that things were going to get better.
Yeah.
I just believed it.
And it was funny as I asked that question because I know that we have people listening that are on a set path in their journey because of their upbringing. We've had goalie Kalkaran 2 episodes ago on runs the Lessons from a Quitter podcast. She's an Iranian American immigrant and she was on a set path because that's what her culture was. That's what her upbringing was. And we can go back founder by founder and there's a similar story where they're just on a path because that's what their upbringing was. You know, their parental influence was. But you knew otherwise, and I wanted to kind of unpack that a bit, and thank you for being so transparent because I know there are listeners that are in that space and they need to hear if your inner being is telling you that you are meant for something different than this journey you're on, give credence to it. I'm not suggesting jump ship right away, but you can't ignore it. And then how do you navigate through that? And so I just thank you for being transparent. But during that season on welfare, creating concrete pots and you're going through and you knew that you were meant for something more and you wanted to create enterprises and be the leader in industry. Were you using that season of a season of learning? I mean, were you consuming, you know, again, not university learning, but school of hard knocks, real life learning? Were you listening to podcasts? Were you on YouTube watching videos? Like, what was that season for you in order to keep encouraging and nourishing that concept of, I know I'm capable and I know there's something greater for me. What were you doing that season?
Well, I was so obsessed with learning other people's stories and being motivated and driven by other people's, whether it's their success stories or just their startup stories. And again, being in that network marketing industry for that short period of time, I was introduced to people like Tony Robbins Robert Kiyosaki and Gary V and all of these people who they preach what we're trying to preach in this podcast. And that is to, if you've got a vision, you've got to execute. And I wasn't really into reading, but I would go and buy books just so I'd have a good collection on my bookshelf. But I loved audiobooks. I did love podcasts. I still do. And even just YouTube videos of these people. I think I also utilized, you know, social media to its greatest advantage, and that was to follow people who were on the similar journey to where I wanted to be. So that was definitely what motivated me to keep moving forward through the personal development and learning and hearing other people's stories, because the more I learned from other people, the more I think, well, if they can do it, I can do it. Hearing Oprah Winfrey's story and how she, you know, her upbringing, I thought, well, if she can do it, why can't I? Yeah. I've always had that mentality that if someone else can do it, or if someone's done it before, anyone can do it.
I love that. And I love that there's probably a listener right now saying, if Mia can do it, I can do it. And
100%.
I love that. So now let's jump into your welfare. You're creating concrete pots. Love that story. You're doing Arbon. That season comes to an end. Let's talk about your first start. Because you're a serial entrepreneur, five or six companies?
Five startups.
Let's talk about your very first one, right? You know, this is right out the gate. This is your first venture you're starting up. The upside to network marketing companies like Arbon is that there's an existing infrastructure for you to operate in.
Correct.
Right? Now you are creating something from nothing, which is the startup. What was that venture and what was that experience for you?
So I remember the day like it was yesterday. I was in that apartment that I was speaking of earlier. I was laying in bed. It was probably 11 o'clock at night. It was in around October 2014.
Okay.
I was scrolling through Instagram. And at that time, influencer marketing wasn't very prevalent. It wasn't big like it is now.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that often that you'd see an influencer promoting a product. So when you did see them promote a product, you'd actually be more aware of it than you would be now, because, you know, it's everywhere.
Yes, it is.
So I looked at this product and it was an in-home teeth whitening product. And I thought, well, that's quite interesting. And being at the time, we didn't have any money. I remember thinking, God, I'd love to have my teeth whitened, but didn't have that income to be able to just go to the dentist and spend however many hundreds of dollars to get my teeth whitened. So I was quite curious at this product. I don't actually remember the name of the company. I don't believe that they're around anymore, but I did purchase one of the products out of curiosity to see if it would work, because it was only around the $50 mark.
Yeah.
So I was really curious. I received the product. I used the product. I loved the product. I got incredible results. And I thought, wow, this is really smart. I feel that there is a big gap in the market here. And that's one thing that I've always prided myself in, is I have the ability to step away from that consumer mindset and step into the position of a potential business owner and to see where there might be a market gap.
Okay.
And with this particular product, I remember thinking, well, this is a really smart product. It's consumable. It's a product that a lot of people would like. Everybody wants whiter teeth. Nobody likes the dentist, and nobody wants to go and spend that exorbitant amount of money at the dentist to get it done. It was the exact same product that dentists would use, but you had the ability to do it at home in the comfort of your own bathroom and for quite a cheap price. That's when I had that light bulb moment. This could be a product that I could potentially sell online myself. With every e-commerce business that I've started to date, they've all been white label products, in the sense that I'm not an innovator. I've never claimed to be an innovator, but what I am great at is branding and marketing and finding that gap in the market. So when I had this idea, I needed to find a manufacturer that was already producing this product because, one, I didn't have the capital behind me whatsoever to go and spend tens of thousands of dollars in formulating a whitening product.
Yep.
But I wanted to find a company that was already producing this product that was safe, that was FDA approved, yeah, and wasn't going to get me sued, basically. So what I needed to do, again, I had maybe under $100 to my name with rent owing.
Oh, my goodness.
I started selling the products without having any stock in hand. So I, in that evening, you know, when I got the product and I tried it and used it, and I was like, yep, I'm going to sell this product myself. I set up an online website. I built, yeah, I don't know how, I used Big Cartel, which, okay, I don't even know if it's still around.
I have not heard of them, so probably
I'm now
not.
A Shopify, yeah, Shopify through and, yeah, through, but I remember Googling how to build a free online website. Like, I didn't even know what the word e-commerce was. Online website, yeah, was my word. So I Googled that. Big Cartel came up. I built a Big Cartel website in a couple of hours, very, very basic, and just used generic photos from Alibaba or Google, yeah, or whatever. I used Instagram. I set up an Instagram business account and I used hashtags to make my first sales. Hashtags were like huge back in those,
yeah,
days.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're making a comeback now as well. But at the time, I would do hashtag teeth whitening, hashtag pearly whites, hashtag white teeth. And I knew that I needed to make 20 sales in order to afford my first shipment, which was 100% generic. There was none of my branding on it.
Okay.
It was the generic packaging from the manufacturer. But I knew that I needed to sell 20 units of this product in order to be able to pay my manufacturer to send me the product. So I was risking big time,
yeah,
because one, yeah, I knew the type of person that I am. Once the money came in, I knew that I had to pay the rent, but I also knew that I needed to have enough money to pay for the stock. So I was really nervous because if I didn't sell 20 units and I only sold 10, I'd have to send that money back to those people.
Yeah.
And I was really risking it, but I'm a massive risk taker. That's just how I am. So within 24 hours, I had already sold like half of what I needed to sell. And I was like, wow, this is amazing.
No paid ads, just
no paid
social
ads. I didn't even
reach.
Know that you could pay
Got
for
it.
Ads.
Okay.
I just used hashtags.
Yeah, okay.
And I'd sold 10 units and I knew I needed to sell another 10. And within 5 days, I'd sold the 20 units that I needed to sell. I'd made that $1,000 that I needed to pay my supplier. I'd never had over $1,000 in my bank account.
Yeah.
Like, it was huge for me. And I sent the money via PayPal to my manufacturer who was based in China. The stock was sent to me and I sent it out to my customers. And I just remember that feeling. I was sitting on my lounge room floor packing orders and it was just the best feeling. I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Like, just having, yeah, that inventory around me and the packaged orders. Like, I was looking at them. It was like a pile of money on the floor. I was so excited.
That's awesome.
From that, I kept on selling and I kept on selling and I sold $1,000 worth. I got the stock and I remember ringing my mum and saying, Mum, I've just made $1,000 from this teeth product. And she goes, okay, great. So, you know, what are you going to do with that $1,000 now? Like, stop selling it. Now you need to get on with life. And I was like, Mum, no, I'm going to reinvest that money back into the business. And she's like, you're crazy. You're so stupid. What are you doing? Like, why would you waste,
yeah,
that money?
Yeah.
Fast forward 6 months, you know, we'd done $1 million in revenue.
Within 6 months?
Within 6 months. So we had the capital to kind of take the inventory to that next level of having it fully customized,
okay,
fully branded. And that's when Pearly Whites Australia was born.
So let's pause real quick. So from your initial 20 orders to your custom branding, when you really started growing, I'm assuming the exponential growth happened when the custom branding came,
absolutely,
into play. So what was that time period from first orders to custom branding?
I needed $20,000 capital to pay for my first initial custom branded
with the
stock.
Manufacturer.
Correct.
Got it.
That's what it cost to get the however many units it was fully customized, their minimum order quantity. I was at a point where I was like, this is awesome. I'm loving this journey. I'm loving this business. But I honestly had no idea what I was doing. I still feel like I don't.
You were an expert at concrete pots. Whitening teeth was totally new.
Exactly. So I knew that I needed some help. I knew that I wanted somebody to partner with me to help me kind of take that next step in business, to get the business to where I wanted it to be, because I didn't believe that I had it in me at that point in time to execute that alone. So I wanted to find somebody who had done e-commerce before, who had sold products through, mm-hmm, you know, e-commerce in the past, and would not only assist me in that journey, but also guide me, mentor me and help me,
yeah,
learn.
Because, yeah,
that was most important to me, because I knew that that product wouldn't be around forever. I knew that that was only going to be the stepping stone to my business journey. which it was. And at the same time, I didn't have people around me in business. I didn't know people in business. I didn't have that credibility that I do now to just walk up to someone and go, hi, I've heard you've been in business before. Do you want to be my investor? Like I was just this girl on welfare, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't anything special. And I met this guy who was in e-commerce and I knew of him. I'd met him in the past and I was actually on my way to Thailand. I was on the train going to the airport and I'd never taken the train to the airport before, but for some reason on this day I decided to. The train station that I got on the train was a train station that I'd never been to in my life. For some reason I went to that train station instead of the one that I would usually go to. And I sat next to a guy that I knew of from the past and we were just chatting and I was saying, yeah, I recently started this new business a couple of months ago. I'm very new in the game. I don't really know what I'm doing, but I've got a great product and I've got a great name and I see huge potential. And he obviously did as well.
Well, I mean, you made $1 million in 6 months.
Well, at this point, we were only a couple of months in.
Got it.
This is when I'd met this guy. And I'd said to him, you know, I would love to find someone who can help me. And that was when he kind of proposed that he could be that person, which really excited me because I didn't have anyone around me. Not a single person around me believed in my vision. No one supported what I was doing. I was very much on this journey all by myself. I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have a supportive family. They're supportive, don't get me wrong. They love me, but they weren't really supportive of this new venture because they were scared. And I believe that now that they, it's not that they weren't supportive. They were just really scared that I was going to stuff it up and dig a deeper hole for myself, I guess. So, you know, when he offered to give me that $20,000 that I needed to buy that stock, for me, that was like anything I could have dreamt of. And it's so funny because I look back now at how excited I was over just a $20,000 loan for a business.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you know, we're seeking millions of dollars investments for capital. Do you know what I mean? So
I bet that $20,000 though, at that point in your life, was more than just the money. It was validation that someone believed in you, right? I mean, that's
100%.
Especially for a first time entrepreneur, like that validation can change the game for you as it did, right?
Yeah. I was really naive. And again, it's a part of the journey, but I was really naive. I thought that $20,000 was so much money.
Yeah.
Like so much money. And I was just naive. I was stupid. I gave him 50% of my company for a $20,000 loan. And I regret that.
Yeah.
I really do. But at the same time, it was part of my journey. It's got me to where I am today. Ever since then, it kind of all just went downhill. And we did, we made a lot of money. The company was turning over between $20,000 to $30,000 revenue a day. We were just flying teeth whitening products all over the world. I couldn't keep up. We couldn't keep up with inventory. We would bring in cargoes, like big shipping containers from China full of stock. And that cargo, that shipping container would be sold out before it would even land on Australian shores.
So was your business model... I know it was white label. I know you had someone making this product overseas somewhere, but it wasn't drop ship. Like it came to you and you were handling fulfillment.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
We had initially we would hold it in our own office, but then we got to the point where we just couldn't. I was spending, you know, upwards of 13 to 15 hours a day just packing orders, which isn't smart from a business perspective because I wasn't able to work on the business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was working in the business. And packing orders wasn't growing the business at all. So although my partner had the strengths that he had in the sense of social media marketing, you know, that was his bread and butter. And again, I didn't really understand it. I look back now and go how naive I was. I obviously have a way more understanding of the power of paid marketing now. But at the time, I was just letting him do what he did and I was kind of just working in the business trying to, you know, I was doing all the customer service and the emails and the live chats on the website. Like it was nonstop packing orders. And we got to a point where we just couldn't really sustain that anymore. I needed to do a lot more in business and on the business. So we decided to get a 3PL logistics company that would hold our stock and they'd fulfill the orders for us. We just couldn't keep up. We were selling so much products that we were selling out before it would even land in Australia. So our fulfillment center was empty all the time.
Were the margins good?
The margins were incredible.
Yeah. That's
awesome. Yeah. I mean, we were profiting upwards of $80 a unit.
Wow. Selling for what, like $150 or
so? Yeah, between $130 and $150.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really good margins. And I think that's a huge thing. I think a lot of people need to, when, you know, they come up with these ideas and these products ideas, and sometimes they don't really give themselves those margins. And I think that's obviously the most important thing.
I mean, the margins help you sustain the business. So you're growing like crazy. What happened with that business?
So, yeah, we were growing like crazy. We started to do pop-up shops in Westfields across Australia around the Christmas season. The business was growing. We were getting some influencer marketing happening, and we were becoming aware. Everyone knew the brand. And even to this day, you know, people know of the brand. They're still running, but I exited the company, which we'll go into. But it does still run. But I do believe that that product was a trend. It had its time.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other companies, one in particular that really just took off, and they had millions of dollars for marketing, and they're like the prevalent brand now.
Yeah.
We just didn't have a great working relationship, myself and my business partner. He was very dominating. He didn't really give me the time to learn. And I think because he was, you know, quite a few steps ahead of me in the game, he wasn't patient in letting me catch up and learn. And that was a big thing that we discussed at the start of our partnership was, I want to learn.
Yeah.
I want you to mentor me and teach me how to become an entrepreneur, because that's what I want to be.
Yeah.
But he just wanted to make money. And so did I, don't get me wrong, but I wanted to be able to duplicate this model again and again and again with future products. So we kind of got to a point where we were just clashing heads. I wasn't allowed to make any business decisions. What I said didn't really go. He was kind of the god of the business, and what he said went. And that didn't sit well with me, because I'm not a yes man kind of girl. I felt like he was taking my baby away from me. And I think there was just so much pride in that business, because I was the founder. It was my idea. I was kind of like, who are you to kind of step in and just take this away from me? So we did butt heads quite a lot. I definitely don't like to take the credit away from him, in the sense that he definitely assisted in the business growing because of his strengths in social media marketing and the ability to promote this product to the right demographics and get the name out there. But we just weren't working. And you got to a point where he became quite nasty.
Okay.
Would probably be the right word.
Okay.
And I think he just wanted me out. Mm. He just wanted to take over the company on his own. He came to me one day and said, I've got an investor based in Los Angeles who I want to give a certain amount of equity to, 18%, to run this company in the US. So we wanted to launch Pearly Whites USA.
Got it.
I was all for expansion. I was all for going global. We were obviously already shipping globally, but we wanted to brand this business to the US market. So he had someone in mind, or he knew an investor who was willing to take over 18% of the company for no upfront capital, but they were going to run the US side of the business. And I remember in my mind thinking, why would you give away equity to someone with no capital? I get it now, more understanding now, but again, we clashed around that idea. But we did. We decided that we're going to give, you know, half of that 18% each to this investor, and we were going to move forward. And I'd still be majority shareholder, because I actually gave him 49% of the company. I own 51% of the company. We were both directors. But I was so naive and so stupid. I still to this day think, how dumb can I be? But somehow he manipulated and persuaded me to give away full 18% of the company.
Oh, wow.
Of the company, of my shares, which dropped me down to a minority shareholder to him.
Yep.
He then combined his shares with the new investor. They obviously had a plan, and they pretty much outvoted me. So I lost my directorship in the company.
Oh, wow.
And then I just held the 34%, I believe it was, that I still owned. It was a really hard time for me, because I felt like I was back to square one.
From the time that you started the first orders until that moment, how much time has passed?
We're probably about 9-10 months.
So really fast.
Really
growth,
fast turnover.
And this experience was still really close to the beginning stages.
Correct. We were still at the start in my eyes. But at this point, I'd lost my directorship. I'd lost everything. The bank had rung me 20 minutes after this board meeting where I'd been outvoted and said, just letting you know, we've cut your credit card. You don't have access to the bank anymore. He changed all the social media passwords. He changed the lock on the office. He just got really, really nasty.
So it was just a full takeover.
It was a full takeover, and that's what he wanted. That was his plan. Although I still held that equity, I knew that he was going to do everything in his power to not issue any dividends to ensure that I wasn't going to take any money from the company. And even in that time where we were making so much money, I understood the concept of having to reinvest money back into the business because we needed to buy new inventory and update websites and social media marketing. Like, that's cost money. But he would never allow us to really take a wage or a dividend. And I was like, this is really weird. Like, why can't we take a bit of profit? You know? Like, why can't we take a little bit of profit? And I had some other ideas that I wanted to execute as well. I really wanted to own, I had this dream of owning a cold pressed juice bar. I really wanted to explore that, because where I was from, this town that I'm from, didn't have that. We didn't have that concept. We didn't have the cold pressed juice trend. So I kind of wanted to be the person filling that gap.
Let me pause you there for a second. So person X, your investor, executes this takeover, cuts you out completely. You're still working in the business because you have your equity position. They can't take your shares away. No salaries, no dividends, nothing like that. Why did you stay engaged at that point in time? Was it just the equity position, or why? I mean,
well, I didn't. So once that happened, once that takeover happened, I pretty much stepped back from the business straight away. And I knew that I needed to do everything I could to sell that 34% that I still owned, because I needed money.
Yeah.
You know, we were taking some ridiculous, like $400 or $500 a week each wage, which was enough to live okay, not much, but it was enough to pay rent for a week and a bit of food. But the company was making so much money, I thought, why aren't we taking a little bit more? But it was part of his plan. And once he did the takeover and took over the business, I knew that he wasn't going to issue any dividends. I knew that he would probably just burn the company out until sales stopped. You know, he obviously increased his director's wage and kept on reinvesting into international business trips.
So you sold your shares out to the remaining
two? No, I ended up finding a buyer.
Oh, okay.
To buy that. I actually ended up paying someone to pretend to be a buyer.
Okay.
And then he ended up finding another buyer who he would rather work with, and that person ended up buying my shares. So that kind of gave me a leg up.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And with whatever payout that was, you started the cold press.
Yeah. So again, this guy that was my investor, I had this dream of owning a cold press juice company. And because that was a more of a bricks and mortar business as opposed to e-commerce, I mean, I laugh at myself now thinking, what the hell was I thinking? Why did I want to own a bricks and mortar business? But I did. And I think that's because all I knew, I didn't know what e-commerce was. And I actually wanted to own this cold press juice company before Pearly Whites came along. But I needed so much more capital behind me in order to do that. So whilst we were in the middle of Pearly Whites, I'd actually approached the same investor saying, I've got this idea of a cold press juice company.
The guy who took over Pearly Whites from you.
And I had another investor of mine, a friend of mine, who had already invested in this. So this ex-business partner, he said, I want to be a part of this juice company.
This was before or after he stole Pearly Whites from you?
Before. Okay. This was halfway through.
Got it.
So we were in the process of all, actually the three of us, setting up this cold press juice company. And when I exited out of Pearly Whites, we were just about to launch this shop.
Okay.
So it was a really hard time because he'd just done the dirty on me so bad with Pearly Whites that I was just about to go and birth another business with him.
Yeah.
It was really hard. Long story short, and you know, it's almost too much to even believe, but he pretty much did the exact same thing again with the juice company.
So you stayed in business with him under the cold press juice company, even though he did one over on you on the Pearly Whites.
Yes, but that was the first juice company.
Got it.
I then opened up a second one.
Okay.
So he combined the shares with the other guy and booted me out of the Bronx Press Juices, which was my first juice company.
How, because this all sounds really fast.
Yeah.
From the time he took Pearly Whites from you, what was the gap until he took the juice company from you?
8 weeks.
So within a 10-month period,
I'd lost two companies.
Unbelievable.
I'll never forget the day. I was sitting in my office and I got this, the receptionist in my office building came and put a letter on my desk. And I looked at the letter and I just knew straight away what was about to happen. It was just like I had this feeling in me. And I looked at the envelope for about a minute before I had the guts to open it. And I opened the envelope and I read it. And it was a letter from their lawyer saying, this is what's happened. Mm. They're removing you from the Bronx. And I remember the day we had, you know, I had my own private office and there was a big glass door. And it was only the day before that they'd gone and put frosting on the glass so you can't see in. And I remember looking at the door thinking, thank God no one can see in right now because I'm about to have a mental breakdown. And I'll never forget the day I said to myself out loud, I'm going to give myself 5 minutes to cry. Like cry so hard because I just was at my lowest. I just lost my first business and felt like I'd let my whole family down and myself. I just lost another business and felt like is this ever going to end? Am I making the right decision in life in this whole business thing? Is this for me?
Yeah.
I set the timer on my phone for 5 minutes and I literally laid on the floor under my desk and I just was hysterical. I put a pillow over my face and I screamed and cried and just got to my lowest of low. And the alarm went off. I brushed myself off. I sat on my chair and I said, you need to make a decision. You need to go head to head with these guys or you just need to give up, throw in the towel and say this business thing is just not for me. And being me, Mia Plessick, I was like, F these guys. I'm going head to head. And I still to this day have no idea how I managed to execute as fast as I did. But within a period of 6 weeks, I had launched a new cold press juice company and a new teeth whitening company.
Within 6 weeks of the breakdown.
Correct.
Under the desk.
Yes.
Face in pillow, sobbing hysterically, 6 weeks executed.
Yeah.
There's two questions that I have to ask from those things. And I asked this question a little bit from my own journey of the times where I've lost my companies and I remember the emotional wear and tear. And as you were telling me the story of losing Pearly Whites, I saw your posture shift. When you retell those stories, what is that experience like for you as you're retelling it? Where is your mental space in those, in the retelling of those stories?
It makes me really upset because I just remember being that young, vulnerable girl who just had a dream and someone tried to take that away from me. And I guess, you know, yes, my posture shrinks because it's just such a hard thing to talk about. It's such a hard time. I think if I'd made this decision or if I'd done this better, would that have happened? Would the outcome be different? But at the same time, we keep going back to, you know, tough times don't last, but tough people do.
Yes.
And I'm a very strong person. I have been through my fair share in life. That have made me the person that I am today, which is a strong, resilient, independent woman. Because of those tough times, I am who I am today. So, you know, I don't like to disregard those times as negative, sad, poor me, poor Mia. You know, I actually like to look at them as a massive lesson. And I'm so grateful that I went through that lesson at that age, not when I'm 45, because what I learned through that journey, I will never allow that to happen to me again. So, yes, it's hard. I get a bit like, you know, my heart rate will probably raise a little bit talking about it. I get nervous because
I saw your cheeks get rosy and your posture shrug. I physically saw it in you, and having gone through it,
I
knew what you were feeling. And I wanted to unpack that for the listeners because there are people listening that have been through it, but they haven't yet gone through the recovery, right?
But this is the thing, and I think this is such an important point to make, is more people fail than they do succeed.
Yes.
As hard as that is to say, it's the truth.
Yes.
And I needed to realize that because when I was going through that, I honestly didn't believe that anyone else had gone through what I was going through. I honestly thought that I was one in a million. But as my journey in business progresses, we're now, you know, 5-6 years into my business journey, every second person that I meet goes, yep, been through it. And I'm like, really? Like, it wasn't just me?
And that's why I tell the startup story, because the journey is not linear by any means, but the threads are the same.
The same.
It is. And I just love when I get incredible founders like yourself that are so transparent so that the listeners can learn from this. And so you have your crying moment. You have a coming to Jesus moment where you're like, I am not going to just sit on the wayside.
No.
I'm going to go head to head.
Yes.
And so, because I want to get to your very current venture, real quickly, what was that head to head journey?
Honestly, I was in autopilot. I freaked myself out thinking about it. I remember getting on the phone to a real estate agent. I needed to secure a commercial property, which I happened to do in 2 days. And you got to remember, I just sold my equity in Pearly White, so I had a fair bit of money behind me, thankfully. I went and got myself a big warehouse. I fitted out the warehouse myself. I was there till like 3-4 in the morning, tiling the walls myself and painting the factory. And I bought this big $20,000 cold press juice machine. I imported 20,000 glass bottles from China. They were coming in on a big ship within 5 days of this decision. I was branding. I was recreating new recipes, new IP of this company, because one thing I said to those boys is I'm not signing a restriction of trade. You can kick me out, but my God, you're not going to stop me from executing another business. And that's exactly what I did. And at the same time, I launched another teeth whitening company called Bondi Smile. And the exact same thing again. I'd gone through that branding process. I'd gone through the marketing. I'd gone into China and got all the products on their way over. And I'd launched two new companies within like 6 weeks. I'm mental. Yeah, like people around me, like, you couldn't be crazier. And I agree now, like years on, I'm like, what was I thinking? Like I could have saved money, but it was that pride in me.
Well, you needed that recovery.
I needed that recovery. I needed to prove to myself more than anything that I can go head to head with these people that have done what they've done to me. But it got to a point where these two businesses were being built on hate. They were being built on negative energy. And because I lived in such a small city outside of Melbourne, we were just in constant rivalry, and it was all over the media. It was in newspapers. People knew what would happen. People would look at me on the streets and know who I am. They would sympathize over what I'd gone through and be like, you okay? I'm sorry. And they would support my businesses. And, you know, it was kind of like who would get into that big drive-through franchise where they had 10 stores and for the juices. And like I got that drive-through contract. And like I was so happy, but I was happy in spite.
Yes.
And I just got to a point where I wasn't enjoying running my businesses because it was built on hate. Yeah. So I ended up exiting from both those businesses and selling both of those businesses and starting afresh, basically.
But those exits were successful exits.
Correct.
They were positive exits.
They were
on your terms as well.
Correct.
Right? So from that, one, just what a great self-awareness you had too, to understand that these are businesses birthed out of spite and malice versus a passion that you had for what the products were.
Yeah. I'd be driving past their shop like really early in the morning undercover to see how many juices were on the shelf. And then I'd go at the end of the day and count how many juices were on the shelf. Or I'd get someone to go into their store undercover and see how many juices they'd sold for the day. Like it was just unhealthy.
Yeah. Yeah. So how long did those second pair of startups last for you?
12 months.
So just to recap, the entire four startup journey,
2 years.
We are at 2 years, yes. Four startups. Unbelievable. So 20,
crazy.
22 is when you started Pearly White. So at the end of 24,
correct.
You're 27 now. So that's 3 years ago. Let's just recap those four businesses. So you went from a distribution company with Pearly Whites to a manufacturing and distribution company, brick and mortar company with the pressed juice. You did it twice.
Correct.
Okay. Very different business models. Mm-hmm. I mean, distribution is the same, but
we still had the e-commerce component of the cold press juices because juice cleansers were a big thing.
Okay.
So we would sell juice cleansers online and we'd deliver them to consumer's door.
Okay.
But yeah, mostly bricks and mortar, supplying wholesale to cafes and,
Yeah. So let's talk about Her Organics, which is what your current venture is right now. And as I say it, I can see the grin on your face. So I know that this one is birthed out of a passion.
Yeah.
How did you get to Her Organics? And of your four previous startups, what model does this one more closely represent?
Probably more so Pearly White's, being that it is 100% e-commerce tangible product. But obviously, I'm 27 now, finished at 24. So I've had a couple of years where I haven't had a product and I've really had time to kind of marinate in that whole e-commerce space.
Yeah.
And I'm never short of an idea. And that's one thing that I pride myself in more than anything is you can outsource paid marketing. You can outsource branding and marketing, but you cannot buy visionary.
Yes.
And that is my biggest strength in business, is being able to visualize a gap in the market or find an everyday product and market it and brand it in a way that targets my certain demographic that I want to target. Or, you know, just even having the ability to just create a feeling through a product more so than anything else. You know, teeth whitening, selling toothpaste, whatever the product may be, it's about creating that feeling for the consumer more than anything. And that's one thing that I'm really, really good at. So I've had time in the last couple of years to really marinate in different ideas and different concepts. And I've been doing a lot more speaking opportunities and traveling the world for that and doing amazing podcasts like this and writing a book and really kind of being more growing my personal brand around e-commerce and branding myself as the startup CEO and moving forward in that direction, but I was really missing that tangible physical product. One thing as well that I love in business for myself is I'm not like the everyday person where we just complain about problems. Like, oh, I wish this was available, or I wish I could do this, or I'm sick of doing this every month, or whatever it may be. I like to turn my pain into power. I like to find an everyday problem that society face, and I like to fix it with a solution. And that's what I've done with every product that I've brought to market, whether it's the teeth whitening, whether it's the juice company, or whether it's Her Organics, which is the organic tampon subscription company. I also like to bring a product to market that plays with a large niche. It's not a small niche. Her Organics came about because I'm a female. I get my period every month like every other woman in this world. And I know this to be fact, that women forget to buy their sanitary items every month. It's just one of those things that we forget to buy them. And we've got to do that awkward run to the supermarket to buy it every month, or get our partner to do the awkward run to the supermarket for us.
Been there, done that.
Exactly. And I wanted to create a product that would enable women to have that, you know, necessity sent to their door every single month conveniently. It takes away that awkwardness for some women of having to purchase it every month. And it's just a convenience play. And not only that, I really wanted to have that ability to educate women on the importance of using organic sanitary items, especially when it comes to tampons, because most people don't realize this, but your large commercial sanitary brands on the market all contain bleaches, perfumes, toxins and chemicals that are really detrimental to our reproductive health and our overall health. That's why with Her Organics, we're so proud, because our products are 100% organic cotton and we don't add anything to them. They're pure, they're healthy, and we're creating a community of women who are proud of their bodies and what we do with them, and what happens to us every month, so we can achieve things like reproducing. I've just got so much excitement in me with this brand, because 50% of the population are women, and you know, regardless of what race, background or walk of life, we all menstruate. So we can really have a lot of fun with this brand.
That is awesome. So how long has Her Organics been around?
We only launched about 7 weeks ago.
7 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So when you approached me for this podcast, it hadn't launched yet.
No.
So we've been in talks for about two months, maybe.
A couple of months.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. So based on your previous experiences, because you have tremendous experience in the e-commerce space, how has this first 7 weeks been compared to the other 7 weeks? Now you have benchmarks, right? Like, and I'm assuming you're probably measuring this journey with Pearly Whites, because Pearly Whites is super.
Which sometimes I think can be detrimental, because we grew so fast with Pearly Whites. I have such high standards. So in my head, I'm like, if I'm not doing 30 grand revenue a day, I'm failing.
Yeah.
Because that was the benchmark that I set really high, really early. Pearly Whites is a little bit more systemized, because I know what I'm doing more so now. I personally have a relatively decent sized community of supporters behind me through social media who follow my journey in business, who have supported my startups. So that was definitely a bit of a leg up. But at the same time, you know, I love the subscription model. I think that it's, I mean, it's so lucrative and it makes me so excited, especially with a product like this, because it's a product that us women need. We don't want, we need. Yeah. And I was always very inspired by the Dollar Shave Club model.
It's funny, as you were speaking, I was thinking to myself, like, for the listeners out there that are, you know, and it may be the male listeners thinking, but the listeners out there thinking, really, tampon subscription model? They said the same thing
about
to
razors
on a subscription model. Like, it is a real thing.
Worth billions, that company now. So I loved that story, and I thought, how can I duplicate that? Because that's one thing in business that I'm so transparent about, is I'm no innovator. I'm a visionary, and I copy. It's a copycat game, and the best copycat wins.
Yes.
And anybody who denies that is really just too naive to admit it. No entrepreneur is really anything different to anyone else. We just have that ability to see a product. How can I manipulate and change that product slightly to create it in my own way or to target a different demographic? And that's what I've done over and over again.
You know, it's interesting. I want to support and expand on that statement you just said, where, you know, entrepreneurs, it's copycats. You take an existing thing and tweak and adjust. And for those that are nodding their head like, that's crazy. No, there are entrepreneurs that are innovating and creating. Let's talk about Uber. Uber is the taxi business with a slight adjustment.
Exactly.
I mean, in Airbnb, the hoteling business with a slight adjustment.
Correct.
Take anything out there for those listening and think about what its true product or service is. And you will see that is it a slight adjustment from
Bumble,
something that was existing.
Tinder, you know, it's just recreating an existing idea and manipulating it slightly. Whether it's from furniture, bathroom products, everything's been done before. We're just recreating the wheel slightly to make it a little bit different.
That is awesome. From our time together, I am such a huge fan of yours now.
Thank you.
I am such a huge fan. So there's two questions though, as our time does come to an end, that I ask every single founder.
Yes.
The first one, I ask because I truly believe that if we forget the people that have contributed to our journey, they'll reach a point where we think we did it all ourselves. We'll find ourselves isolated and it'll inevitably lead to our failure. So when you think back to your 27-year journey, all its ups and downs and highs and lows that you went through, who do you look back and point to with immense gratitude for how they played a role in your story today?
The first person I thought of was actually my younger self. But that's only because I'm so grateful that I believed in myself. Even after what I went through as a child, I still, for some reason, had the security within myself to believe what I could do. But I would have to say my dad, because although he was hesitant in what I did with the rest of my family, this is my mum's husband who came about when I was two, who I call my dad. He's my dad to me. I don't know anything else. But he was always very, very supportive of me and believed in what I was doing. And he would be the only one in the family that would ring me and say, how's business? You know, mum would ring me and say, oh, how's your day going? She would just kind of skip that very important topic because she didn't want anything to do with it. Dad has always been really supportive of my journey, definitely.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Second question that I ask all the founders is, the startup story is like a mentor for those listening. But now I would like you to speak very specifically to one of the listeners, whether it be the existing entrepreneur who's super frustrated with where they're at, the reluctant entrepreneur who has a book of dreams and isn't sure what to do, or maybe it's the defeated entrepreneur because they've been kicked in the gut, they've had businesses stolen from them, whatever the case may be, they think entrepreneurship is not for them. I would like you to speak directly to one of those three, and what would you have to say to them?
Well, I'd probably be more prone to speaking to the person that's been defeated and kicked multiple times because I've been there.
Yeah.
And what I want to say to you is that your past isn't a definition of your future, and it's just making you a stronger person, and you're becoming more aware and more educated on the journey that you want to take. You know, I know what it feels like to feel defeated and to feel kicked down and to feel rock bottom, but I also know what it feels like to feel achieved and feel success and feel gratitude to the journey. As hard as it is to remove that white noise of the people around you telling you not to do something or that you're not good enough to do something or that you can't do something, you really need to dig deep within yourself and find that self-belief, find that cave within yourself where you can feel secure and nurtured within your own self to be able to execute whatever it is that you want to execute. Because if I can do it, if you can do it, we can all do it. And I'm not saying that I've made it. I haven't made it at all. I had my fair share of hurdles every single day, ups and downs. But I think every entrepreneur does. That's the journey. And that's one thing that I really want to paint to the audience today is that social media will paint that you're successful and you're making millions and millions of dollars. But no matter who the entrepreneur is that you look up to, they have days where their cash flows down. They have days where their business, they think, is going to have to shut down. But one thing that we all have in common is that we just keep persevering. We keep putting one foot in front of the other and we keep moving forward. You've just got to ride the journey because entrepreneurship is not easy. It's not a walk in the park, but it's definitely worth it.
Oh, Mia, thank you so very much for being so transparent and sharing with myself and encouraging me and also our listeners.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
After hearing Mia's story, I have to ask the question, how would you have responded in the various positions she found herself? Would you have spent your last $100 to launch a website to try and sell a few units of product you just discovered? Would you have launched two startups immediately after having been removed from your first two startups within an 8-week period? While you take a few moments to think about those questions, let me just say one thing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because those are not your challenges. They were Mia's. You've heard me say it before, but I will say it again. The entrepreneurial journey is not linear, but the threads are what is common among all of us. Those challenges Mia went through are unique to her, and you and I will have our own challenges. What matters is how we respond to those challenges. The reason I love the startup stories of all of our founders is that it gives each of us a perspective of what entrepreneurs have been through to build their businesses. All we hear about are the incredible success stories, and then when we hit a point of failure, we begin to think that we're alone, and that's simply not true. Another reason I love hearing the startup stories of all of our founders is because the common thread in all those moments of incredible challenge and points of failure or obstacles is that they kept moving forward and did not allow those failures to define them, but that they allowed them to grow them and prepare them for the next stage in their journey. I hope you found real value in Mia's journey and her willingness to be vulnerable and transparent with us. If you've been around the startup story for any length of time, then you know how much emphasis I put on the idea that entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. Well, I hope you will help support Mia's journey and her new startup, Her Organics. You can do this in a few ways. The first, follow Mia on Instagram at Mia Plesic, MiaPlecic. Just Mia Plesic. Follow her on Instagram. And then follow her startup, Her Organics. It's her.organics, again, on Instagram. And if you're an Australian listener, you can support Mia's startup by subscribing to Her Organics service at herorganics.com.au. For listeners here in the States and my listeners in the UK, make sure to follow Mia and Her Organics on Instagram as she hopes to bring Her Organics to the US and the UK in the next few months. Stay connected with her there on Instagram. Entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs, so let's make sure we show Mia some support for the value she brought us today. And now for my personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible with sharing our podcast with others, but we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We are a startup, and the most powerful way you can support the Startup Story podcast is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at thestartupstory.co. Share the Startup Story on your social media, either with a link or a screenshot. Make sure you tag or mention us at thestartupstory.co so we can see your help and say thank you for it. And lastly, share the podcast on your LinkedIn profile. The Startup Story is for entrepreneurs, so please do not underestimate the power of sharing the Startup Story on your LinkedIn profile so other entrepreneurs can discover us. In fact, most people struggle to share good content on LinkedIn anyways, so if you want to support the Startup Story, then search for the Startup Story company page, follow us, and share our posts to help encourage other founders and spread the word about the podcast. Every single founder has a story, and the startup stories we bring to you every week can encourage and inspire another founder. It might just be what they needed to hear to keep moving forward on their dreams. I look forward to sharing these stories every Tuesday with hopes to inspire you to start your story.